Sorry you had to hear that. I think I stepped on someone's ego.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 9, Dr. Jekyll Saves His Hyde. Audible sigh. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. Hello, listeners. A little news, in case you're still not our Patreons, please join us, because Again With This, episode 30, which will drop January 15th, is Let's Watch Brian Austin Green in His Smallville Debut. This is late Brian Austin Green and late Smallville, so yep. We'll have a lot to say. That's season 9, episode 1. The title of the episode is Savior. That is available on Hulu. Please join us at patreon.com/againwiththis. Will I mention that Brian Austin Green is a deadbeat dad? Yes.
I look forward to it. I watched this entire episode while on hold with my health insurance company. So
that was
a journey that mm-hmm. That I took.
That's a curve that we can grade on. Sure. Mm-hmm. I might try that one. Maybe on hold with the state sales tax department. Who mm-hmm. could say?
For now, we can say it's time for episode 9, starting with our D plot. Joe's custody case continues being stressful. This is barely a plot. It's one scene, but let's just do it. Joe's lawyer, Henry Waxman, is John Saxon from Enter the Dragon. He just died in July. We miss him. She's in his office in a very demure black dress with a white collar and cuffs. Mm-hmm. Very Wednesday Addams, actually, as mm-hmm. he briefs her on strategy. She should start assembling a list of character witnesses. She seems worried that it's going to look bad for her, that none of her friends slash neighbors have kids. But he assures her that they're going to fight hard for her baby and she just needs to hang tight. And that's it for Joe for this episode. Pretty much.
I keep meaning to look up how and when this plot resolves, and then I never do because I don't care. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the writers just kind of were like, all right, let's just play this out? Like, yeah. It doesn't seem like they care that much. Poor Zuniga.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she had a movie or a play or something that she was doing at the same time. It was like, just cutting down my scenes a lot.
Yeah. Like Andrea in season 4.
Yeah, except I don't think she was pregnant for real in this case.
No, I don't either, but take advantage.
Indeed. Moving on to our C plot and other people who don't have a lot of scenes, Jeffrey returns with unfortunate news. Matt is out for a jog when he sees Jeffrey, remember him, on a basketball court, shooting hoops alone in a pair of very weird, even for the 90s, grimace purple sweatpants you can see in the visual aids.
Yeah, I hope that you managed to get a shot, because I tried and then just gave up. I hope maybe you managed to get a shot that conveys how very much not wearing underpants Jason Biggie is.
I didn't, but I can go back and gif that for sure.
I mean, I think once you're looking for it, you can see it, but mm-hmm. oh my God, like, yeah, the purple sweatpants are a lot. And then there's some sweat patterning. I mean, look, I think he's foxy, but it's like, you're so sweaty. Like, that just seems like it would be uncomfortable mm-hmm. as a non-external genitalia haver.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say. Perhaps Dave has a comment. Dave is sleeping.
Dave's mic is in the next room. Yeah. I'm not sure how Jeffrey got hotter while he was away, but he did. And I was happy to see it.
I think it's the hair, and I'm not sure exactly what happened. I know it's longer, but yeah, he does look better.
So Matt and his also dumpy sweatpants go up to say hello. He is surprised to see Jeffrey there, since he thought Jeffrey was overseas, but Jeffrey resigned his commission. He's a civilian now and has been back in town for a couple of months. And Matt gives a hard smile at this timeline, obviously hurt that Jeffrey didn't call, but Jeffrey says he needed time to get settled, and then explains that after he came out, he was a pariah who just kept getting moved around until he couldn't take it anymore and resigned. Matt is sorry. He thought about Jeffrey a lot and wondered what happened and why he hadn't heard from him. And Jeffrey shrugs that that's the scoop, and Matt's like, right, but you've been in town for months and you didn't even call to say hi? I thought we had something special. Jeffrey needed to get something going on his own first. He really was planning to call Matt, but he can make it up to him with dinner tomorrow. And Matt looks like he's thinking about maybe letting Jeffrey dangle, but he can't because it's Matt, and he agrees. And then Jeffrey's like, come here, and they hug right out in the open where anyone could see. A hug. Moving on. Some number of days later, Jeffrey and Matt are walking on the beach. Matt asks if Jeffrey will miss the sea. Jeffrey says he lives 10 minutes from it, and they crack up and kind of do like a little physical sort of wrestly touch. But, you know, it's like quasi romantic because it's as romantic as they're allowed to get.
Yeah. Steamy and, blocking for the era. Sigh.
Yep. So Matt admits that though he tried to deny it, he fell in love with Jeffrey before he left. Matt says last year, but it was totally this same year. It was just last season. And that's why it hurt so much when he found out that Jeffrey came back and didn't get in touch. And Jeffrey stops walking to say he felt the same about Matt. He never meant to hurt him or make Matt's life more difficult, but there's more to his silence than what he's said. And that is as follows. He is HIV positive. He didn't know what to do. Matt is the first person he has told. He thought coming out to people was hard, but disclosing this is a lot tougher. He didn't know if Matt would ever want to see him again, and it's okay if he doesn't. But of course, Matt reaches out and hugs him, and he will not let Jeffrey wriggle away as he tries to do, which I thought was also a nice physical moment where he sort of like kind of tries to shrug away and Matt will not let him.
Yeah. And they're both very moved in various ways. I mean, yeah. it's good. As exhausting as it is now to sort of relive the inevitable tragedy arc for the queer characters.
Mm-hmm.
They had so little available to do with this at the time, and they did the most that they could.
Yeah.
Both of them. So, well done.
I also wish Matt to tell Jeffrey to please get a therapist, because he has a lot of shit to work out, and it's a lot to put on Matt as his sole support when it takes, like, 15 conversations just to get him to say one true thing ever, because this is consistent with his character.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. They handled that well. Not handling things so well. Our B plot and everyone in it.
Do you know what time it is? It's Allison time.
Here's our B plot. Susan and Allison should maybe not be friends anymore.
pretty sure that's where it ends up. But yeah.
So, because it's 1994, Susan in her skinny ribbed cardigan, we were talking to white tights last week, skinny ribbed cardigans were also the moment at this time. That was one I did do. Bell sleeves, no, skinny ribbed cardigan, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, a bunch. Yeah.
Lots. She and it are crabbily packing and yammering to Allison that it's a good thing Allison's kicking her out, actually. She can stay with her aunt in Newport Beach until she finds her own place, and being that far away will give her a good excuse to ditch Billy without hurting his feelings. And Allison keeps trying to break into Susan's monologue, but Susan barrels ahead, saying she might have been fooling herself, but she had no idea going out with Billy would cause this much pain. Yes, she did! She knew it while she was doing it!
It's her ex-fiancé! Third rail. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, there's really like, would you agree? There's no length of time where it would be okay. Like, never mind, it's been a couple of months. Like, if it was 5 years later, it would still not be okay, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like there's a sort of social or ethical, I forget the name of this principle, but like, if you're raised with someone, you're not attracted to them, right?
Right.
I forget the name of this. Mm-hmm. Listeners, actually, please at me. I don't know why I don't just put this on a post-it. Anyway, I feel like there's an ethical equivalent of that in friendships with exes. And, you know, the higher the standing of the ex, the less hormonal interaction should be allowed with the friends. I mean, look, shit happens. But this isn't the Victorian era. Like, generally speaking, just no.
Yeah, meet another person. It's L.A.
Yeah. save yourself so much trouble and don't. Yeah.
Right. So Allison finally gets her to stop and basically says she was drunk and wants to take back everything she said while drunk. Susan should not move out. And Susan asks whether Allison still loves Billy, and Allison hesitates for like 10 minutes, which is a sign, before launching into the writer's latest version of where we're supposed to think they are in clip two.
Billy and I started out as friends. Best friends, and I still love him that way. I don't think that's ever going to change. But I just couldn't say to myself, this is the man I want to spend the rest of my life with. I do know that I can't come between him and anyone he wants to see, even you.
Well, that was an honest answer to a nosy question. Thank you.
Besides, you'll find that he makes a great first impression, but scratch the surface and he'll very quickly get on your nerves.
What do you mean?
Well, he can be selfish and demanding at times. Let's just say he requires a lot more care and feeding than you might realize. But you'll have to find that out on your own, otherwise you'll always blame me for what might have been.
Okay, well, I'll unpack. You go to work. And, Allison, no more sneaking around about Billy, I promise. Everything will be out in the open.
Oh, really? Drums? I mean, if the drum's purpose here is to remind us that Billy was a shitty friend and fiance for dumping Allison for the reasons he did, namely, hashtag never forget, because she was dealing with sexual abuse, post-traumatic stress, he was like, you're requiring too much attention, and I feel like I don't exist in this relationship, bye.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing Allison said was incorrect, like, on the merits exactly about Billy, but it's like, why did you start out as friends? A, and B, he's a shitty friend as well.
Yeah.
And C, what is the problem? What is the problem with Allison sort of naming and claiming this reason that they broke up? Especially to her college roommate. Sometimes I think writers' rooms, like, were just raised like Homelander, like, they didn't have friends, they didn't have siblings, they were just like, they imprinted on I don't even know, like, a Norman Rockwell painting or Dynasty, and then they just like spin stories out from there. Like, this is not what happened. Were you not here 8 episodes ago?
Yeah. Like, starting with her saying, like, framing it as though I decided Billy was not the person for me, it's like, no, right up until you were both back at work in the conference room, you were trying to get back together, and he said no.
Like, yeah, he, like, pouted off because he's like, it's always about you, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, the, of all the reasons to dump her now with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's hateful, and Andrew Hsu can't carry that kind of hateful. Give that story to Michael Mancini. Thank you.
Exactly. So Susan is over at Billy's that night so he can cook her dinner. They both agree it's better now that they're not badly sneaking around behind Allison's back. I added the badly part. Billy says the subterfuge made it hard for him to focus on how he actually felt about Susan, and when she flirtatiously asks him what he means, he bumbles and doesn't finish a sentence, but she claims to get it and agree. And he gets her to taste the sauce, and judging by her face, it is, surprising no one, not good. She takes the pot away to tweak it, but he doesn't mind, and they end up kissing before dinner is served. And downstairs, Allison gets home from work and is about to go into her apartment when she hears voices coming out of Billy's window and looks up to see Susan and Billy flirting and canoodling. She grits her teeth as she goes into her own place, but goes straight for the vodka in the freezer, pouring her a glass without a mixer, and goes to sit by the window in the dark, where she can still hear them, and sadly toasts, alone.
With her Pier 1 Imports glass that came in a box of four.
They totally
had those. They were in a stack next to the stack of ones that were that royal blue that was everywhere with like the little bubbles baked in.
Yep. It was, and it's plastic so that she can use it by the pool.
Mm-hmm.
At the office the next day, Amanda announces that they need to arrange a party on one day's notice to woo a possible client, and Allison is in charge, but Billy has a great idea. Clip three.
How about using Susan?
Great idea. That meal she cooked at the bowl was amazing. I don't have to tell you that this is a critical evening for D&D. This account could make all of our Christmas stockings a lot fatter. So, get cracking.
You don't mind, do you? I mean, Susan could use the exposure.
Don't be ridiculous. She's perfect for it. Billy, don't forget that Susan and I have been friends for 10 years and still will be long after your little flirtation with her is over and done.
We'll see.
Yeah. Also, why is a junior executive doing event planning?
Yeah. Also, if I were the software person and was like, you're throwing me a party on one day's notice, I have things to do. Like, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But at the bar at this party that has come together on one day's notice that everyone was available for. Allison slams vodka and bitterly watches Billy and Susan kissing in a corner, although Billy weirdly does not look into it since Andrew Shue's arms are firmly at his side while this is going on, as you can see in the
one time that they're not flapping insanely. I guess because he's not walking.
Yes.
God, this show.
God. So Susan has gone back to the prep area when Allison makes her way over to embarrass herself drunkenly in clip four.
Hey there. Party's going great.
Yeah. Except the food. It's awful.
I think it's delicious. So is everybody else.
Well, you are a bit prejudiced. I hope you're being careful with her, Billy.
What do you mean?
I wouldn't want you to catch anything. Back in college, the frat boys used to call her Round Heel Susie. I guess it only took a little nudge to get her on her back.
And you're drunk.
Yeah. Well, you're a self-centered pig. At least in the morning, I'll be sober.
Okay. Go ahead.
Couple of notes.
Yep.
Both
please.
Of them from the 1930s.
Thank you.
Where did you go to college? An Andy Cap comic strip? Like a round heel?
I mean, no one has said that in so long.
Like, I mean, that's from the, like, actresses are sex workers era.
Yes. Yes.
Jesus. Yes. And also, you totally did not say it. Even if that was, like, true, you totally didn't say that about your friend.
No. God.
I will say, though, Courtney Thorne Smith is, again, serving the perfect amount of slurry, too drunk at the office party realness. I'm very impressed with her.
We now know from
and I'm not just saying
Craig
that because we watched that special and we loved her, but maybe a little.
Yeah, listen to our Patreon to find out why our feelings about her have changed a little bit. Because
it's true.
So Amanda, who witnessed this exchange without hearing specifics, of course, from across the room, suggests that Billy take Allison home. Billy replies she isn't his responsibility anymore, which, like, no, except in the sense that she's a person and she's drunk at a work party, like, which is basically what Amanda says as Billy's coworker. She is like, take her home, you fucking idiots. God.
Yeah. Pour her into a cab for everyone's sake.
Yes. Which is my notes before Billy can grab her and pour her into his dumb car.
Not sure she'd fit in it, but yeah.
Allison has wandered into the makeshift kitchen in the conference room to slur at Susan in clip 5.
Allison, everything's going great.
This is ill. Food is salty and the service sucks.
Why are you doing this?
I'm not doing anything. You are. Do you have any idea what your little kissy-kissy spectacle out there with Billy could do to his reputation around here? You are about as good for him as your cooking. In other words, you stink. You've obviously turned him against me. I just know he's out there bad-mouthing me right now.
Look, Allison, I thought we were starting fresh. And I thought that you could handle all of this, but obviously you can't. Just like you can't handle your liquor. Bitch!
They throw drinks at each other. Start fighting.
Allison, stop it! What is wrong with you?
Hey,
Allison, stop it!
Knock it off!
Billy pulls him apart.
Knock it off!
Knock it off.
Thank you.
I'm gonna catch a cab home, Billy, so give my regrets to our clients.
Boy.
There's gonna be a whole bunch of those. You sure you don't wanna get on an installment plan with that?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yikes.
Aside from being clearly about to giggle during the catfight blocking, which who can blame her? Because those are probably pretty fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't get marinara in your hair and have to give the continuity girl a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was so good.
That was
I hope you're at, do you know what your problem is? God, there's going to be so much more of this.
Excellent. Yeah, it's delightful. And they both really
I mean,
go
something's
for it.
Happening.
The next day, Susan is packing again, much more angrily this time, as Allison babbles that she thought she was ready to see Billy dating, but apparently not. Maybe the distance this move will put between them will help Allison and Susan patch up their friendship, she suggests, because it really is important to her, and she's sure Susan will find an apartment soon. Susan curtly says she's already found one. Allison asks her to pass on her address so that she can forward Susan's mail, but that's going to be really easy because Susan's moving in with Billy. But also, wow, what a bad idea. You've known him for like 6 days, girl.
Yeah. Also, it's Billy. It's still Billy.
It's going to continue being Billy the whole time you're living with him.
Eke Billy. Or no, siempre Billy.
Finally, our A plot. Michael has Amanda use her wiles to get his job back while Jake and Sydney get swept up in the business intrigue. Jake rolls over in bed to find Sydney trying to sneak out without waking him and mildly busts her. She is also, by the way, in a skinny ribbed cardigan.
Mm-hmm.
He groggily offers coffee, but she claims to have a million things to do today and thanks him for everything. And Jake, who has probably pulled this exact routine himself 1 million times, asks her straight up what's wrong, and she claims nothing is. It was wonderful, and she'll see him at Shooters. In some unfortunate timing, she walks out his door just as Jane is heading out for work. Clip 6.
Great. Good morning.
You little bitch. It all makes perfect sense now. You get Jake to do your dirty work for you, and you pay him back in your own unique fashion.
That's a lie. I'm just trying to protect you from the creep you think is in love with you.
You know, you are unbelievable. First you trying to destroy my relationship with Chris using your sick, twisted lies, and now you've sucked Jake into your psychotic little web.
You know, leave Jake out of this. He's the only decent man I've ever met. You know, just wait, Jane. You'll find out the truth about Chris. And I hope that it's only after you've put your tender little heart into his slimy little hands. Because you know what? He's gonna squish it. Then he's gonna stomp it into the ground. And it's gonna hurt like nothing you've ever felt before.
I mean, she was married to Michael, so she's got some experience, but she does have this coming. Like,
she really does.
I don't know if it's the acting or the writing of Jane, but they really, like, in addition to being a frustrating doormat, she's also like a boring twat. How does that? She's a terrible designer.
She's really the total package of shit.
She is.
She's got nothing going for her, honestly.
That's true.
I mean, she's very pretty.
Act drunk. let's see your drunk acting. Tense fingers.
So then Michael and his casual fun employment look come see Amanda at her office. He wastes zero time buttering her up and just gets straight to the favor. He's lost his job and he wants her to use her influence over Peter to talk him into hiring Michael back. And she says this, clip 7.
Wait a minute, Michael. I don't know what you've heard about Dr. Burns and me, but I can assure you it's greatly exaggerated. I have no influence over him at all.
Well, Amanda, you and I both know that you could get a Tibetan monk to strip naked and dance the hoochie coochie if you wanted to bad enough, or if there was something in it for you.
All right. Let's pretend I could persuade Dr. Burns to reconsider. Would it be worth, say, your half interest in Mancini Designs?
Are you out of your mind? I ask for a friendly favor and you want to take me for all I'm worth.
That's the deal on the table, Michael. Right now, that business is barely breaking even. It certainly isn't going to pay your bills anytime soon. If you want to sleep on it, fine. Meanwhile, I've got work to do.
So I thought this was a money-making machine that was going to, like, that Chris thought he was going to ride into.
Yeah, that he got a five-figure marker for.
Yeah, I mean, presumably he was just lying about that. But, like, why is he working Jane if there's nothing to work? Right?
Yeah. I mean, how good does he think Sydney's going to be in bed?
I mean, probably pretty good. But, Well, okay, yeah.
Like, not real adventurous if memory serves
right.
of certain plot lines. But
great point.
Yeah. All of this just really, it's all to create emotional conflict. And then they don't bother researching the business stuff, which we saw a million times on 90210. And it's actually fun for me to be like, and asshole says what? But still, like, it's Jane. How hard is it to scam Jane, you guys? Like, this just really seems like so much machinating about Jane.
Yeah.
She's real dumb.
Furthermore, Hoochie Coo and Round Heel Susan in the same episode. Like, whose grandfather wrote this?
Oh, no, really? Honestly. Gasp. Stan. We need rewrite.
Okay. At Shooters later, Sydney's in the middle of trying to wait tables when Jake, you guessed it, grabs her arm to stop her, though at least he establishes that she's on break before confronting her about their personal relationship in clip 8.
What's going on?
That's what I'd like to know. You've been playing this cold and aloof with me all morning.
Look, I made a mistake, a big one. I'm on probation and I really need this job. I just slept with the boss, which is the quickest way out the door I can think of. Please don't misunderstand me. I really appreciate you standing up for me, but I wish we could just leave it at that. Pretend that last night never happened. It'd be better for both of us.
This is wise. She's not wrong, but I don't know where this, like, late in life good decision making is coming from all of a sudden.
I don't either. I guess they figured they couldn't have both Andrew sisters be completely unable to exercise any self-preservation. I don't know.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Also, it's Jake. Like, I know he's a weird kisser, but come on.
Seriously. So with Michael having stormed out, Amanda goes to the studio to inspect and compliment Jane's latest work and needle her about what a shame it is that Michael is going to share in the profits when it inevitably becomes a big success.
Snort.
Indeed. Jane asks why Amanda is there. So Amanda asks what it would be worth to Jane to get Michael out of the business and her hair for good. Jane laughs bitterly, reminding us all that Amanda was the one who got him into the business in the first place, and Amanda shoots back that doing so saved the company from bankruptcy, so whatever, and Jane has to agree that this is true and invite Amanda to proceed, which she does in clip 9.
If I'm able to get Michael to sign over his share of Mancini Designs back over to you, what would be in it for me?
Well, if you could somehow pull that off, I'd be willing to split his share with you.
Well, that seems more than generous.
Not really. After what he's done to me lately, I'd be willing to sell my soul. Even to you, Amanda. Just to get rid of him. So give it your best shot.
Okay.
I kind of like two things about that. First, that Amanda's not like, what? I'm hurt about the, you know, even to you business.
Yeah.
But also Amanda always looking out for like, where can I get more mailbox money? Like, where's my next scam so that like someone can be sending me a share of something where I don't have to do anything? Because,
yeah,
you know,
it's true.
I, you know, it's wrong, but yet I respect it on a certain level.
No, me too. This is why the show thinks she's good at businessing, because she, like, by the show's lights, she is. Like, it's internally consistent about that, at least, even though it makes no sense, like, in the world.
Right. So the next day, Amanda's on the phone kicking someone's ass when Michael comes in again. He has thought about her offer, and since nothing is more important to him than his medical career, if she can get him his job back, she can have his share of Jane's company. Amanda purrs that he's made the right decision. He wants to know what makes her so confident that she'll convince Peter, but she tells him that's her problem, and they go on in clip 10.
As you said, I usually get what I want. Peter Burns happens to be a particularly easy target due to his infatuation with me. I guarantee I can get him to do anything I want. Even something as unthinkable as rehiring you.
Oh, and I'm just curious, though. What's in this for you?
Don't worry about me, Michael. I've already arranged for an overly generous cut.
Really?
What can I say? When God was passing out business sense, Jane was still at the back of the line getting her nails done. So, do we have a deal?
Oh, Amanda, we have a deal. And, do me a favor. Make him beg for it.
I always do.
It is very obvious what is going on, and I'm a little mad at Amanda not to know what he is doing. Like,
I completely did not realize what he was doing until the end, and I had seen this before. Especially since, here's the thing, the tape recorder that he gets out is the size of a fucking lamb chop. It's huge.
It's, you know,
like, are you wearing a wire? And this is after I pulled a thing from the visual aids being like, what is with the giant jacket?
Him like patting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. No idea.
Oh,
yeah.
Cute.
Well, I mean, we came up on the internet. Someone's always listening. You can't just talk shit. So
true. Mancini. At the studio, Chris enters with a sheaf of order sheets. His bosses are saying that if things LOL. Continue this way, they can expand the line as soon as next quarter. Jane is thrilled. She owes us all to him, she says, but he feels bad. He's worried that their relationship with him, that her relationship with him has driven a wedge between her and her friends. He would like to try starting again, maybe a clean slate with Jake and Sydney. Why don't they go to Shooters and try to make amends? So they do. Sydney's working when she sees them come in and makes a beeline for Jake behind the bar, telling him she will not wait on them. He tells her to wait there and heads for Chris and Jane's table, and they have this exchange in clip 11.
Jane, I don't think this is a very good idea. Why don't you and Crocodile Dundee just make your way over to another bar?
Wait a minute, Jake. We came here because...
Jake, we come here with Olive Branch in hand. There's been a horrible misunderstanding which has led to all of this. I would like to try to start over again between us. Please, Jane's sake.
Okay. One drink. For Jane's sake.
Thanks. You're letting them stay.
They said they wanted to make peace. Look, I don't want to be the belligerent one here, okay? Just have Kathy take her table.
I'll be back in a minute. Men's room.
Okay.
Diddling the boss, I hear. That's one way of staying out of the nut house.
You bastard. Stay away from me! You hear me?
Okay, that's it. Get out. Both of you.
Now, wait a minute. That girl's out of her mind. I did absolutely nothing.
I don't give a damn. Get out of my place.
Fine.
How could you, Jake? We only came here to make peace.
Get out.
She has you so fooled, you have no idea what a sick person you're involved with.
Funny, I was just about to say the same thing to you.
I mean, first of all, going to the men's room and then whispering in her ear, like, she has red hair, it's Jane's sister, and he's 5 feet away. Like, don't be so soapy, please.
Yeah.
Is A. B, seriously, who wrote this? Jackie Coogan? Like, the little rascals all, like, invaded the writer's room? Like, that girl's out of her mind. Like, the delivery was just so stagey and bizarre that, I don't know, the Maltese Falcon of Down Under, very weird.
Yes. But once again, Jake is not having it. And standing firm and not convinced that Chris is not bullshit and is still right. So good for Jake. Meanwhile, Amanda's on the deck at Peter's house admiring the view. She follows him in when he goes to get her a brandy. And there's some business involving an electronic chessboard that is very silly, but very 90s. And of course, Amanda is better at the game than he is and points out how he has exposed his rook.
It's buried under numerous pleats in those burnt mustard pants, which he's paired with a black turtleneck. Still would.
Of course.
It's very Steve Sanders outfit. Still would.
Mm-hmm. When she comments on his play, he agrees that she's right with no ego and asks where she learned to play. Also, of course, she taught herself. Her number one rule is always to think three moves ahead. And they have this exchange, clip 12.
You know, I've been looking for a chess partner just like you. I'm very tired of playing by myself.
You know, he almost sells it. Almost.
He does. Because this is a soap pro, and he stops just short of looking at the camera and being like, I got this.
Yeah.
Which he does.
Yep.
No need.
Yep. So he moves in to kiss her, obviously intending to escalate things beyond, which is the perfect time for her to ask her little favor that he hire Michael back at the hospital. She says she's doing this on behalf of Michael's ex, whose life he's been making a living hell since Peter fired him. Peter obviously suspects there's more to it than that and says so, but she declines to say what, which turns out to be fine as he agrees to hire Michael back as requested. OMG, this music, though. Clip 13. In all the years,
we're gonna make it after all. And I do mean make it.
It's not the worst sub music, but it's very bad.
It's really, really old-fashioned, just like everything else in this episode.
True. So the next day, Kimberly's in the lounge when Michael comes in with his stuff, smugly telling her he's back. She is suspicious about his account of how this happened, but since he doesn't volunteer the real story, she just congratulates him. And Jake is getting ready to open at Shooters when Sydney comes in, telling him he couldn't reach her the night before because she unplugged her phone so that she could do some serious thinking. She really thinks it's better for them both if she quits. She's caused a lot of trouble and it's not fair to him. but he refuses her resignation, saying she would be violating her probation. He would be losing his best employee. She insists that her best option is to get her PO to let her move away from Jane and Chris and Jake. But Jake thinks that's a bad idea. Jane is going to find out about Chris eventually and realize that Sydney was right. And as for Jake, but she doesn't let him finish that thought, saying goodbye and thanking him for everything. But he stops her, saying he cares about her and about their relationship. She doesn't think one night together qualifies, and he makes it a very cute, sheepish face that I had to GIF because it goes on for quite a while and is adorable.
Yeah.
So he suggests that they start over and invites her for dinner. And once she confirms that it's a date, she accepts and they continue to be cute. Less cute. At the studio, Amanda's standing behind Jane's desk with her as she hands Michael the papers to sign. And he does some fake dithering, saying he's finding it hard to give it all up now that he's grown so attached to the place. Jane's outfit, by the way, in the scene, speaking of her fashion expertise, do you want to try to describe the situation?
I mean, it's like overalls, but then I guess it's corduroy and they're like rust colored. Like there's some good ideas there, but it's just like done in such a 90s way. And also it really is like this. I don't know why the 90s were incapable of princess seeming until like 1997. But yeah, it just is like this very, it's like a boob diaper, but in rust corduroy and it's overalls. And then the way it's attached and, you know, there's like a million claw clips in the scene. I just can't with the claw clips.
You really hate them.
I really do. I mean, I have one in right now, but like those particular like cheap ass clock, I can't.
Yeah. So Amanda's like, just sign, but Michael is like, clip 14.
No, I tried. I really did. I just love this business too much. Hell, it's even got my name on it. I don't know how I could even have dreamed of giving it to you.
I told you he wouldn't do it.
Michael, I got you your job back. I could have it taken away again just as easily.
Oh, I don't think so, Amanda.
Peter Burns happens to be a particularly easy target due to his infatuation with me. I guarantee I can get him to do anything I want.
Now, you wouldn't want Loverboy to hear you say something as crass as that, would you?
You conniving son of a bitch.
Oh, and Jane, you're going to love this.
When God was passing out business sense, Jane was in the back getting her nails done.
You're scum, Michael.
Well, you know, you play hardball with me and I'm going to knock it out of the park every time. Oh, and Amanda, you're going to do me a little favor from now on. I want you to keep me abreast of all the little tidbits you pick up from our friend the doctor. Anything about hospital goings-on that might help me improve my position there. A weekly update will do. Or Peter Pumpkin Eater gets a load of what's on tape. Understood? Jane, always good to see you. And I'll be talking to you, Amanda.
Jane, I'm sorry.
Get out.
Why do you bother?
Part of me wonders also why Amanda's not just like, go ahead and play it for him. I dare you.
Well, she basically, I mean, we will get to it, but yeah. I mean,
yeah.
She is not scared.
Yeah.
Annoyed. Right, seriously. To slightly backtrack to the party that Allison threw together and then drank, John Taylor, the head of Mersol Software, is a Law & Order defense attorney / SVU judge, Tom O'Rourke.
Yep.
He is also deceased, but he died like 11 years ago. We miss him also. He's very impressed by the party, and Amanda assures him that they can lock in the fee schedule he proposed, which Bruce then later finds her to yell at her about while Peter eavesdrops. And if Bruce catches her making deals like that behind his back again, she'll be out on her ass. Amanda gets it.
All right, Bruce.
But before she can apologize.
Mr. Chaz on your peachy notebook. All right, take it easy.
Before she can apologize, he has stomped off again. Peter asks if she's okay. She's just sorry he had to hear that and suggests that they take off. So they end up back at Peter's in front of the fire where Amanda broods and Peter tells her not to let it get her down. The night was a success. She then admits that she may have made a tactical error with regard to the two of them and Michael. And Peter guesses that Michael tricked her into having Peter rehire him and now she regrets it. And she's like, yes, but also he has a recording of me saying some shit about you that is not great. And he's trying to use it to blackmail me into getting information about the hospital out of you. And Peter looks like he almost admires this gambit on Michael's part, I have to say.
Yeah.
So she asks if Peter hates her for not being truthful with him, but it turns out he has a deep passion for liars, which is a very cute line and especially funny for a soap character.
Mm-hmm.
He tells her not to worry about Michael. Having him back at the hospital means Peter can keep an eye on him. He would like to talk her about D&D, however, since he was very impressed tonight. The operation is a powerhouse, but Bruce resents Amanda's initiative and wants to rein her in too much. They'll have to find a way around him. She's not sure what he means. He's thinking about a little power play that would put her in charge of D&D with Peter as her financial partner. She thinks Bruce is too well insulated for that, but Peter thinks everyone has their vulnerable spot. They just have to find it. And then they fall back onto the pillows and fuck, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, in what looks like the same suite as they were in Niagara Falls at Superman 2.
Kind of.
They just like redid it in a slightly updated way that wasn't so pink, but yeah.
Yeah. Let us close things out by naming our episode MVP. I mean, Peter Burns.
Yeah.
He's triumphing over everybody.
I mean, and if not Peter Burns, then Jack Wagner, who he used to do this on General Hospital, too. Like there would be some like extremely, tragical, like I'll activate this earthquake orator and kill all of poor Charles. And he'd be like, "Burr." But then he would also like have this sort of admiring face about whatever Duke Lavery or occasionally Sean Donnelly was up to. So, yeah.
Love it.
But for sure, Peter Burns.
Okay. Least valuable player.
You never get me, writers. You never get me, see? I mean, everyone's fairly horrible, I guess. Chris, again. But also, like, the writers. Can you bring it into, like, the 70s at least?
Yeah. Chris for sure, but I'm going to say Jane also, because like Lucy and the football with this bitch, like honestly, stop believing it's going to happen. Just be glad he only owns half your company and not the whole fucking thing at this point. You clearly are not qualified to be a steward of it.
It would be really funny if she were like, get out. And then no one moved because it's Jane. Just come on. Next time on Again With This, Peter and Amanda's takeover scheme ramps up, Joe's custody battle defense cramps up, Kimberly's pregnancy plans hit a snag, and Allison hits the bottle again, even harder. The bottle you should be hitting before you visit our visual aids is the Costco-sized Visine. We do visual aids for every episode of Again With This, and you'll find them on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you'll find a link to buy our very special 90210 book, available in all formats. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. And we hope you'll have a little flirtation with our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Tons of extra content. Please join us today. I'm post-catfight dry cleaning bill Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is double-double Marsha Cross-Cross Tara Ariano, and she's at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Hoop Dreamboat David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.